Chapter 27. I am not sure what made us all go up to the consul's bedroom at the apex of the ship to watch the translation to normal space. His large bed, the one I had been sleeping in for the past couple of weeks, was in the center of the room, but it folded to a sort of couch, and I did that now. Behind his bed were two opaque cubes, the wardrobe cubby and the shower lavatory cube. But when the hull was allowed to go transparent, these cubes were just dark blocks against the star field all around and overhead. As the ship spun down from Hawking velocities, we asked that the hull be made transparent. Our first glimpse, before the ship started its rotation to line up for deceleration, was of the world of Renaissance Vector. Close enough to be a blue and white disk rather than a starry speck, with two of its three moons visible. The Renaissance sun was brilliant to the left of the illuminated planet and moons. There were scores of stars visible, which was unusual, since the glare of the sun usually darkened the sky so that only a few of the brightest stars could be seen. Aenea commented on this.
"Those are not stars," said the ship as it completed its slow rotation.
The fusion drive roared into existence as we began decelerating toward the planet. Normally, we never would have exited from C-plus this close to a planet and moons. Their gravity wells made spin-down velocities very dangerous. But the ship had assured us that its augmented fields would handle any problems. But not this problem.
"Those are not stars," repeated the ship. "There are more than 50 ships under drive within a 100,000-kilometer radius of us. There are dozens more in orbital defense positions. Three of those ships, torch ships from their fusion signature, are within 200 kilometers of us and are closing."
None of us said a word. The ship had not had to tell us this final bit of information. The three fusion drive streaks seemed to be directly overhead, burning down at the top of our decelerating ship like blowtorch flames coming at our faces.
"We are being hailed," said the ship.
"Visual?" said Aenea.
"Audio only."
The ship's voice sounded more terse and businesslike than usual. Was it possible for an AI to feel tension?
"Let's hear it," said the girl.
"The ship which has just entered Renaissance System," the voice was saying. It was a familiar voice. We had heard it in Parvati System. Father Captain DeSoya.
"Attention! The ship which has just entered Renaissance System," he said again.
"Which ship is the call coming from?"
asked A. Betic as he watched the three torch ships close on us. His blue face was bathed in blue light from the plasma drives overhead.
"Unknown," said the ship. "It is a tight beam transmission, and I have not located the source. It might be coming from any of the 79 ships I am currently tracking."
I felt as if I should make some comment, say something intelligent.
"Yoicks," I said.
Aenea glanced at me and then looked back at the closing torch ship drives.
"Time to Renaissance V?" she asked softly.
14 minutes at constant delta V," said the ship. "But this level of deceleration would be illegal within 4 planetary distances."
"Continue this level," Aenea said.
"Attention, the ship which has just entered Renaissance System," the DeSoya voice was saying. "Prepare to be boarded. Any resistance will result in your being rendered unconscious. I repeat, attention, the ship which has just entered."
Aenea looked up at me and grinned.
"I guess I can't use the depressurization ploy, huh, Rawl?"
I could not think of anything clever to say beyond my "yoicks" commentary. I lifted my hands, palms up.
"Attention! The ship which has just entered the system, we are coming alongside. Do not resist as we merge external containment fields."
For some reason, at that moment, as Aenea and A. Betic raised their faces to watch the three fusion drives separate as the torch ships actually became visible less than a kilometer away, one on each point of an equilateral triangle around us, I watched the girl's face. Her features were tense, perhaps,
a slight tension at the corners of her mouth. But all in all, she seemed perfectly composed and raptly interested. Her dark eyes were large and luminous.
"Attention, the ship," said the PAX captain's voice again. "We will be merging fields in 30 seconds."
Anea walked to the edge of the room, reaching out to touch the invisible hull. From my vantage point, it was as if we were standing on a circular summit of a very tall mountain, with stars and blue comet tails on every side. And Anea was perched on the edge of the precipice.
"Ship, please give me wide-beam audio so all the PAX ships can hear me."
Father Captain DeSoya is watching the proceedings in tactical reality as well as real space. In tactical, he stands above the plane of the ecliptic and sees his ships arrayed around the decelerating target ship, like points of light set along the spokes and rim of a wheel. Near the hub, so close to the girl's ship as to be almost indistinguishable, are the Melchior, the Gaspar, and the Balthazar. Farther out, but decelerating in perfect synchronicity with the four ships at the hub, are more than a dozen other torch ships under the close command of Captain Satie on the St. Anthony. 10,000 clicks beyond them, set around a slowly rotating perimeter hub, also decelerating into cislunar Renaissance V space, are the Benediction-class destroyers, three of the six C-cubed ships, and the attack carrier St. Malo, upon which DeSoya watches the events from the ship's combat control center. He had, of course, wanted to be with the Magi task force, closing on the girl's ship, but he realized it would be inappropriate to be in such close command. It would have been especially galling to Mother Captain Stone, promoted only last week by Admiral Sarah, to have her first full command undermined in such a way. So DeSoya watches from the St. Malo, his Archangel Raphael in parking orbit around Renaissance V, with the defense pickets and protective ALRs. Switching quickly from the crowded red-lit reality of St. Malo's CCC to the fusion flame view of tactical space, he sees the sparks above this rotating wheel of ships, the dozens of ships set in a giant sphere to stop the girl's ship from fleeing in any direction. Moving awareness back to the crowded CCC, he notes the blood-red faces of observers Wu and Brown, as well as Commander Barnes Avni, who was in tight-beam contact with the 50 Marines aboard the Magi ships. In the corners of the crowded combat control center, DeSoya can see Gregorius and his two troopers. All three of them had been bitterly disappointed not to be in the boarding parties, but DeSoya is holding them back as personal bodyguards for the trip back to Pacham with the child. He keys the tight beam channel to the girl's ship again.
"Attention, the ship," he says,
feeling the pounding of his heart almost as background noise.
"We will be merging fields in 30 seconds.
He realizes that he is terrified for the girl's safety. If something is to go wrong, it will be in the next few minutes. Simulations have honed the process so that there is only a 6% projected chance of the girls being harmed. But 6% is too large for DeSoya. He has dreamed of her every night for 142 nights. Suddenly, the common band rasps, and the girl's voice comes over the combat control center's speakers.
"Father Captain DeSoya," she says, there is no visual. "Please do not attempt to merge fields or board this ship. Any attempt to do so will be disastrous."
DeSoya glances at the readout. 15 seconds to fields merging. They have gone over this. No threats of suicide will prevent their boarding this time. Less than 0.01 seconds after the fields merge, all three of the Magi torch ships will spray the target ship with stun beams.
"Think, Father Captain," comes the girl's soft voice. "Our ship is controlled by a hegemony-era AI. If you stun us..."
"Stop fields merge," snaps DeSoya, with less than 2 seconds until that is to happen automatically.
Acknowledgement lights flick on from the Melchior, Gaspar, and Balthazar.
"You've been thinking silicon," continues the girl. "But our ship's AI core is completely organic. the old DNA type of processor banks. If you stun us into unconsciousness, you stun it.
Damn, 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 DeSoya hears. At first, he thinks it is himself whispering, but he turns to see Captain Wu cursing under her breath.
We are decelerating at 87 gravities, continues Enea. If you knock our AI out, well, it controls all internal fields, the drives.
DeSoya switches to the engineering bands on the St. Malo and the Magi ships. Is this true? Will this knock out their AI? There is an unbearable pause of at least 10 seconds. Finally, Captain Hearn, whose academy degree had been in engineering, comes on the tight beam.
We don't know, Federico. Most of the details of true AI biotechnology have been lost or suppressed by the Church. It is a mortal sin to...
Yes, yes, snaps DeSoya, but is she telling the truth?
Somebody here has to know, will a DNA-based AI be at risk if we spray the ship with stunners?
Bramley, the chief engineer on the St. Malo, keys in.
Sir, I would think that the designers would have protected the brain from such a possibility.
Do you know? Demands DeSoya.
No, sir, says Bramley after a moment.
But that AI is totally organic, persists DeSoya. Yes, comes Captain Hearn's voice on tight beam. Except for the electronic and bubble memory interfaces, a ship's AI of that era would have been cross-helix structured DNA, held in suspension with.
All right, says DeSoya on multiple tight beams to all ships.
Hold your positions. Do not, repeat, do not let the girl's ship change course or attempt spin-up to C+. If it attempts this, merge and stun.
Acknowledgement lights flicker from Magi and the outer ships.
So please don't create this disaster, comes the end of Enea's broadcast. We are only trying to land on Renaissance Vector.
Father Captain DeSoya opens his tight beam to her ship. Enea, he says, his voice gentle. Let us board and we'll take you to the planet.
I guess I'd rather land there myself, says the girl.
DeSoya thinks that he can hear a hint of amusement in her voice.
Renaissance Vector is a big world, says DeSoya, watching the tactical readout as he speaks.
They are 10 minutes from entering atmosphere.
Where do you want to land?
Silence for a full minute. Then Enea's voice.
The Leonardo spaceport in Da Vinci would be all right.
That spaceport has been closed for more than 200 years, says DeSoya. Aren't your ship's memory banks more recent than that?
Only silence on the comm channels.
There is a Pax Mercantilis spaceport at the western quadrant of Da Vinci, he says. Will that do?
Yes, says Enea.
You will have to change direction, enter orbit, and land under space traffic control, tight beams DeSoya. I will download the Delta V changes now.
No, says the girl. My ship will land us.
DeSoya sighs and looks at Captain Wu and Father Brown.
Commander Barnes Avni says, My Marines can board within 2 minutes.
Her ship will be entering atmosphere in 7 minutes. DeSoya says. At her velocity, even the slightest miscalculation will be fatal. He keys the tight beam.
Enea, there is too much space and aircraft traffic over Da Vinci for you to try a landing like this. Please instruct your ship to obey the orbital insertion parameters I've just transmitted and...
I'm sorry, Father Captain, says the girl, but we're going to land now. If you want the spaceport traffic control to send up approach data, that would help. If I talk to you again, it'll be when we're all on the ground. This is... me. Out.
Damn, says DeSoya.
He keys Pax Mercantilis traffic control. Did you copy that control? Sending approach data now, comes the controller's voice.
Hearn, Stone, Boulez, snaps DeSoya. You copy?
Acknowledged, says Mother Captain Stone. We're going to have to break off in... 3 minutes, 10 seconds.
DeSoya flicks into tactical long enough to see the hub and wheel breaking up as the torch ships initiate their Delta Vs to achieve braking orbits. The ships were never designed for atmosphere.
The Saint Malo has been in orbit around the planet and now lies almost in the path of the girl's ship as it breaks wildly before entering atmosphere.
"Prepare my dropship," commands DeSoya.
"Cap," he says over the planetary comm channel.
"Here, sir,"
comes Flight Commander Klaus's acknowledgement. She and 46 other Scorpions are waiting in combat air patrol high above Da Vinci.
"Are you tracking?"
"Good plot, sir,"
says Klaus. "I remind you that no shots will be fired except under my direct command, Flight Commander."
"Yes, sir."
The Saint Malo will be launching, 17 fighters, which will follow the target ship down, says DeSoya. "My dropship will make the number 18. Our transponders will be set to 059.
"Affirmative," says Klaus. "Beacons to 059er. Target ship in 18 friendlies."
"DeSoya out," he says, and unplugs his umbilicals to the combat control center panels. Tactical space disappears. Captain Wu, Father Brown, Commander Barnes Avney, Sergeant Gregorius, Key, and Reddick follow him to the dropship. The dropship pilot, a lieutenant named Karen Norris Cook, is waiting with all systems ready. It takes less than a minute for them to buckle in and launch from the St. Malo's flight tube. They have rehearsed this many times. DeSoya is getting tactical feed through the dropship net as they enter atmosphere.
"The girl's ship has wings," says the pilot, using the ancient phrase.
For millennia, feet dry has meant an aircraft crossing over land. Feet wet signifies crossing over water, and has wings means translation from space to atmospheric travel. A visual of the ship shows that this is not literally true. While data on the old ship suggests that it has some morphing capability, it has not actually grown wings in this case. Cameras from the defense pickets clearly show the girl's ship entering the atmosphere stern first, balancing on a tail of fusion flame. Captain Wu leans close to DeSoya.
"Cardinal Lord Dasami said that this child is a threat to the Pax," she whispers so that the others cannot hear.
Father Captain DeSoya nods tersely.
"What if he meant that she could be a threat to millions of people on Renaissance V?" Wu whispers. "That fusion drive alone is a terrible weapon. A thermonuclear explosion above the city."
DeSoya feels his insides clamping with the chill of those words, but he has thought this out.
"No," he whispers back. "If she turns the fusion tail on anything, we stun the ship, shoot out its engines, and let it fall."
"The girl," begins Captain Wu.
"We can only hope she'll survive the crash," says DeSoya.
"We won't let thousands or millions of Pax citizens die."
He leans back in his acceleration couch and keys the spaceport, knowing that the tight beam has to punch through the layer of ionization around the screeching dropship. Glancing at the external video, he sees that they are crossing the Terminator. It will be dark at the spaceport.
"Spaceport control," acknowledges the Pax traffic director. "The target ship is decelerating on our directed flight path. Delta V is high. Illegal, but acceptable. All aircraft traffic cleared for a 1,000-kilometer radius. Time to landing, 4 minutes, 35 seconds.
"Spaceport secured," chimes in Commander Barnes Avney on the same net. DeSoya knows that there are several thousand Pax troops in and around the spaceport. Once the girl's ship is down, it will never be allowed to take off again. He looks at the live video. The lights of Da Vinci gleam from horizon to horizon. The girl's ship has its navigation lights on, red and green beacons flashing. The powerful landing lights flick on and stab downward through clouds.
"On path," comes the traffic controller's calm voice. "Deceleration nominal."
"We have a visual,"
cries Cap Commander Klaus over the net.
"Keep your distance," tight beams DeSoya.
The Scorpions can sting from several hundred clicks out. He does not want them crowding the descending ship.
"Affirmative."
"On path, ILS reports nominal descent, 3 minutes to touchdown," the controller calls up to the girl's ship. "Unidentified ship, you are cleared to land."
Silence from Aenea. DeSoya blinks in tactical.
The girl's ship is a red ember now, almost hovering 10,000 meters above the pack's spaceport. DeSoya's dropship and the fighters are a click higher, circling like angry insects. Or vultures, thinks the father captain. The Llano Estacado had vultures, although why the seed ship colonists had imported them no one knew. The staked planes, the stakes being the atmosphere generators set in a grid every 30 clicks, had been dry and windy enough to reduce any corpse to a mummy within hours. DeSoya shakes his head to clear it.
1 minute to landing, reports the controller. Unidentified ship, you are approaching zero descent rate. Please modify Delta V to continue descent along designated flight path. Unidentified ship, please acknowledge.
Damn, whispers Captain Wu.
Sirs, says Pilot Karen Cook. The ship has stopped descending. It's hanging there about 2,000 meters above the spaceport.
We see it, Lieutenant, says DeSoya. The ship's red and green lights are flashing. The landing lights on the rear fins are bright enough to illuminate the spaceport tarmac more than a mile and a half below them. Other spacecraft at the port are dark. Most have been pulled into hangars or onto secondary taxiways. The circling aircraft, including his own dropship, show no lights. On the multiple tight beam, he says,
all ships and aircraft, keep your distance, hold your fire.
Unidentified ship, says the PAX controller. You are drifting off path. Please resume nominal descent rate at once. Unidentified ship, you are leaving controlled airspace. Please resume controlled descent at once.
Shit, whispers Barnes Avni. Her troopers wait in concentric circles around the spaceport, but the girl's ship is no longer above the spaceport. It drifts over the center of Da Vinci. The ship's landing lights wink off.
The ship's fusion drive shows no signs of coming on, DeSoya says to Captain Wu. Note that it's on repulsors alone.
Wu nods, but is obviously not satisfied. A fusion drive ship hovering above an urban center is like a guillotine blade over an exposed neck.
Cap, calls DeSoya. I'm moving within 500 meters. Please close with me.
He nods to the pilot, who brings the dropship down and around in a predatory swoop. In their rear couches, Gregorius and the other two troopers sit stiffly in full combat armor.
What the hell is she up to?
Whispers Commander Barnes Avni. On his tactical band, DeSoya can see that the commander has authorized 100 or so troopers to rise on reaction packs to follow the drifting ship. To the external cameras, the troopers are invisible. DeSoya remembers the small aircraft or flying pack that had plucked the girl from the Valley of the Time Tombs. He keys ground control and the orbital pickets.
Sensors, are you watching for small objects leaving the target ship?
The acknowledgement is from the primary picket ship.
Yes, sir. Don't worry, sir. Nothing bigger than a microbe's gonna get out of that ship without us tracking it, sir.
Very good, says DeSoya. What have I forgotten? Aenea's ship continues floating slowly over Da Vinci, heading north-northwest at about 25 clicks per hour, a slow vertical dirigible drifting on the wind. Above the ship swirl the fighters that have entered atmosphere with DeSoya's dropship. Around the ship, like the rotating walls of a hurricane around the eye, are the Cap Scorpions. Beneath, flitting just above city buildings and bridges, tracking proceedings on their own suit visor infrared sensors and tracking feeds, fly the spaceport marines and troopers. The girl's ship floats on silent EM repulsors over the skyscrapers and industrial areas of Da Vinci on Renaissance Vector. The city is ablaze with highway lights, building lights, the green swaths of playing fields, and the brightly lit rectangles of parking areas. Tens of thousands of ground cars creep along ribbons of elevated highways, their headlights adding to the city light show.
It's rotating, sirs, reports the pilot. Still on repulsors.
On video as well as tactical, DeSoya can see Aenea's ship slowly turning from the vertical to the horizontal. No wings appear. This attitude would be strange for the passengers, but makes no practical difference. the internal fields must still be controlling up and down. The ship looking more than ever like a silver dirigible, drifting with the soft breezes, floats over the river and rail yards of Northwest Da Vinci. Traffic control demands a response, but the comm channels remain silent.
What have I forgotten? Wonders Father Captain DeSoya.
When Aenea asked the ship to rotate to the horizontal, I admit that I almost lost my composure for a moment. The sense of losing one's balance was all but overwhelming. All three of us had been standing near the edge of the circular room, looking down through the clear hull as if peering over a cliff's edge. Now we tipped over toward those lights 1,000 meters below. A. Bedick and I took several involuntary steps back toward the center of the room. I actually flailed my arms to keep my balance. But Aenea remained at the edge of the room, watching the ground tip up and become a wall of city buildings and lights. I almost sat down on the couch, but I managed to remain standing and control my vertigo by seeing the ground as a giant wall we were flying past. Streets and the rectangular grid of city blocks moved by as we drifted forward. I turned in a complete circle, seeing the few brightest stars through the city glare behind me. The clouds reflected back the orange lights of the city. "What are we looking for now?" I asked. At intervals, the ship reported the presence of the circling aircraft and the number of sensors probing us. We had ordered the ship to shut off the insistent demands of spaceport traffic control. Aenea had wanted to see the river. Now we were over it. A dark, serpentine ribbon wound through the city lights. We drifted over it toward the northwest. Occasionally, a barge or pleasure boat passed underneath, although from this perspective, the light seemed to crawl up or down the wall of the city we were drifting by. Instead of answering me directly, Aenea said,
"Ship, you're sure that this used to be part of the Tethys?"
"According to my charts," said the ship. "Of course, my memory is not."
"There!" cried A. Bedick,
pointing directly ahead down the line of dark river. I could see nothing, but evidently Aenea did.
"Get us lower," she ordered the ship. "Quickly!"
"The safety margins have already been violated," said the ship. "If we drop below this altitude, we may..."
"Do it!"
shouted the girl. "Override!
Code 6, Prelude C-sharp! Do it!"
The ship lurched down and forward.
"Head for that arch," said Aenea, pointing directly overhead along the wall of city and dark river.
"Arch?" I said. Then I saw it, a black cord, an arc of darkness against the city lights. A. Bedick looked at the girl.
"I had half expected it to be gone, torn down."
Aenea showed her teeth.
"They can't tear it down. It would take atomic explosives, and even those might not work. The Technocore directed the construction of those things. They're built to last."
The ship was hurtling forward now on repulsors. I could clearly see the arch of the Farcaster portal, like a giant hoop over the river. An industrial park had grown up around the ancient artifact, and the rail yards and storage yards were empty, except for cracked concrete, weeds, rusting wire, and the hulks of abandoned machines. The portal was still 1 kilometer away. I could see the lights of the city through it. No, now it seemed to shimmer a bit, as if a curtain of water were falling from the metal arch.
"We're going to make it," I said.
No sooner were the words out than a violent explosion rattled the ship, and we began plunging toward the river.
"The old Farcaster portal," cries DeSoya. He had seen the arch 1 minute earlier, but had thought it another bridge. Now it sinks in. "They're headed for the Farcaster portal. This used to be part of the River Tethys."
He brings up tactical. Sure enough, the girl's ship is accelerating toward the arch.
"Relax," says Commander Barnes Avney. "The portals are dead. They haven't worked since the fall. It can't..."
"Get us closer," DeSoya shouts at the pilot. The dropship accelerates, throwing them all deep into their couch cushions. There is no internal containment field in a dropship.
"Get us close. Close the gap,"
DeSoya shouts at the lieutenant. On the wideband command channel, he says, all aircraft close on the target.
They're going to beat us to it, says Pilot Cook through the
3G force, pressing her back into the command chair. Cap leader, calls DeSoya, his voice strained by the high G load. Fire at the target, fire to disable engines and repulsors now. Energy beams lance through the night. The girl's ship seems to stumble in midair like a gut-shot beast, and then falls into the river several hundred meters short of the Farcaster portal. An explosion of steam mushrooms up into the night. The dropship banks around the pillar of steam at an altitude of 1,000 meters. The air is filled with circling aircraft and flying troopers. The comm channels are suddenly alive with excited chatter. Shut up, orders DeSoya over the widebands. Cap leader, can you see the ship? Negative, comes Klaus's voice. Too much steam and debris from the explosion. Was there an explosion? Demands DeSoya. Then, on tight beam to the defense pickets 1,000 clicks above. Radar sensors. The target ship is down, comes the reply. I know that, you idiot, says DeSoya. Can you scan it under the river surface?
Negative, answers the picket. Too much airborne and ground clutter. Deep radar can't discriminate between.
Damn, says DeSoya.
Mother Captain Stone?
Yes, comes his former exec's voice from her torch ship in orbit.
Slag it, orders DeSoya. The portal, the river beneath it, slag it for a full minute. Slag it until it melts. Wait, slag it in 30 seconds.
He switches to airborne tactical bands. Every aircraft and trooper in the vicinity, you have 30 seconds before a CPB lances this entire area. Scatter. Pilot Cook takes the advice and banks the dropship sharply, accelerating back toward the spaceport at Mach 1.5.
Whoa, whoa, shouts DeSoya through the G-load.
Just a click out, I need to watch.
Both visual and tactical are a visual demonstration of chaos theory, as hundreds of aircraft and airborne troops fly away from the portal as if flung outward by an explosion. The area is barely empty on radar before the violet beam burns down from space. 10 meters wide and too bright to look directly at, the CPB strikes the ancient Farcaster portal perfectly on target. Concrete, steel, and ferroplast melt into lakes and rivers of lava on either bank of the real river. The river itself turns to steam in an instant, sending the shockwave and steam cloud billowing out over the city for kilometers in every direction. This time, the mushroom cloud reaches toward the stratosphere. Captain Wu, Father Brown, and all the others are staring at Father Captain DeSoya. He can almost hear their thoughts. The girl was to be captured alive. He ignores their stares and says to the pilot, I'm not familiar with this model of dropship. Can it hover?
For a few minutes, responds the pilot.
Her face is slick with sweat under her helmet. Get us down there and hover over the portal arch, commands DeSoya. 50 meters would be fine.
Sir, says the pilot, the thermals and shock waves from the steam explosions do it, Lieutenant.
The father captain's voice is level, but there will be no arguing with it. They hover. Steam and a violent drizzle fill the air, but their searchlight beams and high-profile radar stab downward. The Farcaster arch is glowing white-hot, but it still stands. Amazing, whispers Commander Barnes Avney. Mother Captain Stone comes over tactical. Father Captain, the target was hit. But it's still there. Do you want me to lance it again?
No, says DeSoya.
Beneath the arch, the river has cauterized itself, water flowing back into the superheated scar. New steam billows upward as the riverbanks of melted steel and concrete flow into water. The hissing is audible through the external pickups. The river is wild with eddies and whirlpools. It is filled with swirling debris. DeSoya looks up from tactical and his monitors and sees the others looking at him again. The orders were to take the child alive and return her to Pacham.
Commander Barnes Avney, he says formally.
Would you please order your troops to land and begin an immediate search of the river and adjoining areas?
Certainly, says Barnes Avni, keying her command net and issuing orders.
Her gaze never leaves Father Captain DeSoya's face.